Today we'll be continuing The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Chapter 10, Part 2. Before Roger Chillingworth could answer, they heard the clear, wild laughter of a young child's voice proceeding from the adjacent burial ground. Looking instinctively from the open window, for it was summertime, the minister beheld Hester Prynne and Little Pearl passing along the footpath that traversed the enclosure. Pearl looked as beautiful as the day, but was in one of those moods of perverse merriment, which, whenever they occurred, seemed to remove her entirely out of the sphere of sympathy or human contact. She now skipped irreverently from one grave to another, until, coming to the broad, flat, armorial tombstone of a departed worthy, perhaps of Isaac Johnson himself, she began to dance upon it. In reply to her mother's command and entreaty that she would behave more decorously, Little Pearl paused to gather the prickly burrs from a tall burdock, which grew beside the tomb. Taking a handful of these, she arranged them along the lines of the scarlet letter that decorated the maternal bosom, to which the burrs, as their nature was, tenaciously adhered. Hester did not pluck them off. Roger Chillingworth had by this time approached the window and smiled grimly down.
"There is no law, nor reverence for authority. No regard for human ordinances or opinions, right or wrong, mixed up with that child's composition," remarked he,
as much to himself as to his companion.
"I saw her the other day bespatter the governor himself with water at the cattle trough in Spring Lane. What in heaven's name is she? Is the imp altogether evil? Hath she affections? Hath she any discoverable principle of being?"
"None save the freedom of a broken law," answered Mr. Dimmesdale in a quiet way, as if he had been discussing the point within himself. "Whether capable of good, I know not."
The child probably overheard their voices, for looking up to the window with a bright but naughty smile of mirth and intelligence, she threw one of the prickly burrs at the Reverend Mr. Dimmesdale. The sensitive clergyman shrunk with nervous dread from the light missile. Detecting his emotion, Pearl clapped her little hands in the most extravagant ecstasy. Hester Prynne, likewise, had involuntarily looked up. And all these four persons, old and young, regarded one another in silence, till the child laughed aloud and shouted,
"Come away, mother! Come away, or yonder old black man will catch you! He hath got hold of the minister already! Come away, mother, or he will catch you! But he cannot catch Little Pearl!"
So she drew her mother away, skipping, dancing, and frisking fantastically among the hillocks of the dead people, like a creature that had nothing in common with a bygone and buried generation, nor owned herself akin to it. It was as if she had been made afresh out of new elements, and must perforce be permitted to live her own life, and be a law unto herself, without her eccentricities being reckoned to her for a crime.
"There goes a woman," resumed Roger Chillingworth after a pause, "who be her demerits what they may, hath none of that mystery of hidden sinfulness which you deem so grievous to be born. Is Hester Prynne the less miserable, think you, for that scarlet letter on her breast?"
"I do verily believe it," answered the clergyman.
"Nevertheless, I cannot answer for her. There was a look of pain in her face, which I would gladly have been spared the sight of. But still, methinks it must needs be better for the sufferer to be free to show his pain, as this poor woman Hester is, than to cover it all up in his heart."
There was another pause, and the physician began anew to examine and arrange the plants which he had gathered.
"You inquired of me a little time agone," said he at length, "my judgment is touching your health."
"I did," answered the clergyman,
"and would gladly learn it. Speak frankly, I pray you, be it for life or death." "Freely, then, and plainly," said the physician, still busy with his plants, but keeping a wary eye on Mr. Dimmesdale. "The disorder is a strange one, not so much in itself, nor as outwardly manifested, insofar at least as the symptoms have been laid open to my observation. Looking daily at you, my good sir, and watching the tokens of your aspect now for months gone by, I should deem you a man sore sick. It may be, yet not so sick, but that an instructed and watchful physician might well hope to cure you. But I know not what to say. The disease is what I seem to know, yet know it not."
"You speak in riddles, learned sir," said the pale minister, glancing aside out of the window.
"Then to speak more plainly," continued the physician, "and I crave pardon, sir, should it seem to require pardon, for this needful plainness of my speech. Let me ask, as your friend, as one having charge under Providence of your life and physical well-being, hath all the operation of the disorder been fairly laid open and recounted to me?"
"How can you question it?" asked the minister. "Surely it were child's play to call in a physician and then hide the sore."
"You would tell me, then, that I know all," said Roger Chillingworth deliberately,
and fixing an eye, bright with intense and concentrated intelligence, on the minister's face.
"Be it so. But again, he to whom only the outward and physical evil is laid open, knoweth oftentimes but half the evil which he is called upon to cure. A bodily disease, which we look upon as whole and entire within itself, may, after all, be but a symptom of some ailment in the spiritual part. Your pardon, once again, good sir, if my speech give you the shadow of offense. You, sir, of all men whom I have known, are he whose body is the closest conjoined, and imbued and identified, so to speak, with the spirit whereof it is the instrument."
"Then I need ask no further," said the clergyman, somewhat hastily rising from his chair.
"You deal not, I take it, in medicine for the soul."
"Thus a sickness," continued Roger Chillingworth, going on in an unaltered tone, without heeding the interruption, but standing up and confronting the emaciated and white-cheeked minister, with his low, dark, and misshapen figure.
"A sickness, a sore place, if we may so call it, in your spirit, hath immediately its appropriate manifestation in your bodily frame. Would you, therefore, that your physician heal the bodily evil? How may this be, unless you first lay open to him the wound or trouble in your soul?"
"No, not to thee, not to an earthly physician," cried Mr. Dimmesdale passionately, and turning his eyes, full and bright, and with a kind of fierceness on old Roger Chillingworth.
"Not to thee. But if it be the soul's disease, then do I commit myself to the one physician of the soul. He, if it stand with his good pleasure, can cure, or he can kill. Let him do with me as, in his justice and wisdom, he shall see good. But who art thou that meddlest in this matter, that dares thrust himself between the sufferer and his God?"
With a frantic gesture, he rushed out of the room.
"It is as well to have made this step," said Roger Chillingworth to himself, looking after the minister with a grave smile. "There is nothing lost. We shall be friends again anon. But see now how passion takes hold upon this man, and hurrieth him out of himself. As with one passion, so with another, he hath done a wild thing ere now, this pious Master Dimmesdale, in the hot passion of his heart."
It proved not difficult to reestablish the intimacy of the two companions, on the same footing and in the same degree as heretofore. The young clergyman, after a few hours of privacy, was sensible that the disorder of his nerves had hurried him into an unseemly outbreak of temper, which there had been nothing in the physician's words to excuse or palliate. He marveled, indeed, at the violence with which he had thrust back the kind old man, when merely proffering the advice which it was his duty to bestow, and which the minister himself had expressly sought. With these remorseful feelings, he lost no time in making the amplest apologies, and besought his friend still to continue the care, which, if not successful in restoring him to health, had, in all probability, been the means of prolonging his feeble existence to that hour. Roger Chillingworth readily assented, and went on with his medical supervision of the minister, doing his best for him in all good faith, but always quitting the patient's apartment at the close of a professional interview with a mysterious and puzzled smile upon his lips. This expression was invisible in Mr. Dimmesdale's presence, but grew strongly evident as the physician crossed the threshold.
"A rare case," he muttered. "I must needs look deeper into it. A strange sympathy betwixt soul and body. Were it only for the art's sake, I must search this matter to the bottom."
It came to pass, not long after the scene above recorded, that the Reverend Mr. Dimmesdale, at noonday, and entirely unawares, fell into a deep, deep slumber sitting in his chair, with a large black letter volume open before him on the table. It must have been a work of vast ability in the somniferous school of literature. The profound depth of the minister's repose was the more remarkable, inasmuch as he was one of those persons whose sleep, ordinarily, is as light, as fitful, and as easily scared away as a small bird hopping on a twig. To such an unwanted remoteness, however, had his spirit now withdrawn into itself, that he stirred not in his chair, when old Roger Chillingworth, without any extraordinary precaution, came into the room. The physician advanced directly in front of his patient, laid his hand upon his bosom, and thrust aside the vestment that hitherto had always covered it, even from the professional eye. Then indeed, Mr. Dimmesdale shuddered and slightly stirred. After a brief pause, the physician turned away. But with what a wild look of wonder, joy, and horror. With what a ghastly rapture, as it were, too mighty to be expressed only by the eye and features, and therefore bursting forth through the whole ugliness of his figure, and making itself even riotously manifest by the extravagant gestures with which he threw up his arms towards the ceiling and stamped his foot upon the floor. Had a man seen old Roger Chillingworth at that moment of his ecstasy, he would have had no need to ask how Satan comports himself when a precious human soul is lost to heaven and won into his kingdom. But what distinguished the physician's ecstasy from Satan's was the trait of wonder in it. Thank you for joining Bite at a Time Books today, while we read a bite of one of your favorite classics. Again, my name is Bree Carlisle, and I hope you come back tomorrow for the next bite of The Scarlet Letter.